Thanksgiving may be known to many as the quintessential American holiday, as food historian Sandy Oliver just mentioned. But for some, that story of pilgrims and Native Americans coming together peacefully over a feast, well, it's problematic.
Thanksgiving as a national holiday should absolutely just drop that Native narrative and really focus on something that doesn't alienate an entire group, which is food, which is something that we can all enjoy and something that we can all share.
Chef Sean Sherman is founder and CEO of The Sous Chef and the author of The Sous Chef's Indigenous Kitchen. Today, he's seeking a new approach to Thanksgiving, one that's centered on food. But even as a child who was born and raised on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota, Sherman says he was taught the same sugar-coated Thanksgiving story everyone else was.
Any school system will hear pretty much the same story of the pilgrims and Indians feasting and, the cutout hand turkeys and the whole works. So we went through that exact same learning, even on Pine Ridge Reservation in the 1970s.
And in terms of what your Thanksgiving table looked like when you were a kid, describe that for us.
Very typical. We utilized just a lot of those recipes from the 50s and 60s. A lot of them were straight out of like Betty Crocker type cookbooks, turkey, mashed potatoes, stuffing. Because we were on the Pine Ridge Reservation, we would have sometimes some more Lakota dishes like taniga, which is a soup made out of intestine and stomach. We also had a sauce called wojapi, which is made out of chokecherry, pieces like that.
Now, you were familiar with what Native foods and Indigenous foods were as a child, were you not?
There were some of those pieces, and it wasn't until I, was much older and really shifted my focus as a chef to really try to understand what my Lakota ancestors were eating. And I did have a realization that I did not know much about it. And looking around, it looked like a lot of people didn't know much about Indigenous foods either. So there was definitely some tribes that had a lot of recipes and some tribes that didn't. And I just really wanted to try and figure that all out. So it kind of sent me on a path to understand what my Lakota ancestors were eating.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that process of rediscovering some of the Indigenous foods or rediscovering or even discovering?
Yeah, so it was a matter of, just realizing that there was very little Indigenous food representation out there in the culinary world. I mean, still today, there are very few Native American restaurants. You have giant cities like New York or LA or Chicago with zero Indigenous Native American restaurants that are, particularly to the history and the land of where those cities stand. And those are huge food cities too, right? So for me, trying to look backwards, I really had to try to understand what was an Indigenous food system. So we started looking at, what were people growing in particular areas and the history of the agriculture of those regions and what kind of seeds and plants were they growing, with all the different kinds of corns and beans and squash and sunflower and amaranth and chilies, just depends on where you are. And just looking at the immense of diversity of those pieces and how people were processing them and utilizing them, but also looking at the knowledge of all the plants around them in general. So looking at the wild foods that were out there and, understanding that all these plants have a purpose. They're medicine, they're utilitarian. You can make, paints and clothing and all sorts of stuff with them and using them in that very resourceful kind of way. So we just started really seeing food around us. We stopped using the word weed because that just meant we didn't know what it was. And we spent time, researching to find out the meanings of these plants and what they could use for, just like our ancestors did. And looking at cooking techniques and food preservation techniques, and even if you're on the ocean, you have a whole other world of food right offside the shore there, of all the plants and animals and shellfish and everything. So it was really looking at every different region, because when you look at an Indigenous perspective of North America, you see there's hundreds of groups still alive today. There's 574 federally recognized tribes in the U.S., 634 in Canada, and up to a fifth of Mexico still speaks an Indigenous language, and there's so much diversity amongst that it should be exciting for people to really understand how Indigenous peoples were utilizing the foods and plants around them for everything, and how we can move that forward to just celebrate our regions so much deeper.
Is it part of a movement, I'm wondering, to quote-unquote decolonize our food?
You know, there has been a movement happening, and it's not just about decolonizing. We really call it more of a kind of an indigenous evolution because, you know, for a lot of indigenous groups out there, we've been in kind of a constant state of oppression ever since the inception of reservation systems and, you know, the immense loss of land and lives that happened in the 1800s and before that. You know, for me, I was just reaching back to my great-grandfather's generation who grew up and foresaw that change because when I was born on Pine Ridge, 1974, it hadn't even been 100 years since the Lakota were all forced onto the Pine Ridge Reservation, you know, so it wasn't that much time that has passed. But today we see tribal communities all over the U.S. and Canada and people really digging back to understand their food a lot deeper and, you know, growing out a lot of these heirloom native seed varietals and really pushing because it becomes a really healthy diet on top of all that. So we see a whole bunch of chefs and seed keepers and growers and farmers and ethnobotanists and all sorts of wonderful community organizers over the past few years.
You know, food is the central theme to what we're talking about on Thanksgiving. It's the central theme to the day. When you're thinking about your journey to learning about Native and Indigenous foods and Thanksgiving specifically, how do those things come together? I'm wondering if you see that as a process of reclaiming the holiday or just making it what you want it to be, making it something different.
Yeah. So, you know, I did a lot of research on the history of Thanksgiving. You know, I was really looking for when did that story particularly become a part of our school curriculum, you know, and I found through researching that it was really during the time of the turn of the century, around the late 1800s, early 1900s in our progressive era. And there was a rise of nationalism happening because people were afraid of this huge influx of immigrants coming into the United States, and people wanted to instill what was, you know, Americanism, basically. They really took to the colonial ideology, and stories like particularly Thanksgiving becomes instilled into our curriculums and our schools everywhere. So that's why 70 years later, on Pine Ridge Reservation, I'm learning that exact same story of something that had nothing to do with Native people because the Native people were never consulted when coming down to it. It was just this portrayal of Americanism in a colonial period. So I think it's just restructuring it. And again, you know, not alienating an entire group over it and just, you know, celebrating what it should be about, which is thankfulness and gratitude.
Sean Sherman is the founder and CEO of The Sous Chef and author of The Sous Chef's Indigenous Kitchen. Sean, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me again.
And happy Thanksgiving.
All right.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.